Hi, I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Tuesday, May 18th. I'm joined by our military correspondent, Judah Ari Gross, and our U.S. correspondent, Jacob Magid, who is joining us from New York. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, Amanda.
Thank you for having us.
I would say it's a pleasure, but really we're here to continue discussing our continuing conflict with the Palestinians in Gaza and the continuing rain of rockets. Judah will update us with the number of rockets and casualties. We will discuss military capabilities on both sides, the international standing of Israel, and also ceasefire possibilities. So Judah, please begin and update us with what happened over the weekend and the holiday.
So far, in the 9 days of fighting between Israel and Palestinian terror groups in the Gaza Strip, well over 3,000 rockets and mortar shells have been fired from Gaza. A not insignificant percentage of these have landed within the Gaza Strip, have sort of failed to clear the border and landed somewhere inside Gaza. There have been a number of deaths and injuries sort of associated with this. Not that many, but a non-zero number. In response, the IDF has conducted hundreds of retaliatory strikes on a variety of different targets in Gaza, mostly against Hamas, but also against the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is the second biggest, second most significant terror group in Gaza. Over 200 Palestinians have been killed so far. Most of these, the IDF says, were members of terrorist groups. The latest figures that the IDF says are they believe that at least 150, probably more, terror members have been killed. But this does also include, a not insignificant number of Palestinian civilians who are in some ways in the line of fire. In addition, 10 Israelis have been killed so far, and hundreds more have been injured, either directly from rocket strikes or from injuries related to running to bomb shelters. Obviously, there's been significant property damage. The fact that those numbers aren't higher is in large part due to the very successful raid of interceptions by the Iron Dome.
What's happening on our northern border as well?
So last night, for the third time, there's been some attacks on the northern border. According to the IDF, at least 6 projectiles were fired towards the Israeli town of Misgav Am, which is sort of right pressed up against the border with Lebanon. All of those failed to clear the border and landed within Lebanese territory. Now, the big concern is that the Lebanese terror group, which is really, a terrorist army, a state within a state in Lebanon, Hezbollah, would get involved in the fighting and sort of open this up to a war in the north. That's obviously the concern. That does not appear to be the case here. According to the IDF, the projectiles were fired by a Palestinian faction in southern Lebanon. There's, a not insignificant number of small Palestinian terror groups, some of them affiliated with larger Palestinian terror groups, but operating within Lebanon. So that seems to be the case here. The IDF doesn't, at this point in time, expect, Hezbollah to get involved. Hezbollah has also made some comments in the Lebanese press that it's not interested in directly getting involved in the fighting. But the IDF does expect, additional attacks to come from Lebanon, potentially from Syria, sort of as fighting continues in Gaza. There were similar things that happened in 2014 as well on that front. So it's an area that, has the potential to become very, very serious. But at this point, it seems to be these sort of small scale attacks by smaller, less threatening groups than Hezbollah.
In both Lebanon and Jordan, we heard reports of citizens rushing our border. Is this something to be concerned about as well?
I mean, it's a source. This has happened before. There have been, and a number of different times over the years, there have been large scale, riots along Israel's borders in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Syria, in some cases. So it's something that's a complicated thing sort of in the day to deal with. Obviously, there are significant implications if there's large numbers of, Lebanese citizens or Syrian citizens or Jordanian citizens, especially, who are killed. I'm saying especially not because Jordanian lives are better or more important than Lebanese lives, but because Jordan is, officially, a country with which Israel has friendly ties. Israel's sort of technically at war with Lebanon and Syria, so things are a little bit different. But obviously, these are areas of concern, sort of on a tactical level. Doesn't necessarily mean something in terms of expanded fighting in Lebanon and Syria. At this point, it seems unlikely just because the main parties involved in those countries are not interested in a large-scale conflict at this time. But if things get significantly out of hand, then, all of those dynamics can change.
Okay, staying in the theme of military, last week we had a special Times of Israel community live event in which we discussed the military capability of Hamas. And you had mentioned then that it's possible that we'll see some technology or capabilities that we haven't seen before in the past from Hamas. Have we seen that since then?
So one area in particular that we've yet to see any successful attacks is on the sea. Hamas over the years has been building up a significant sort of naval commando presence, and this includes any number of things, you know, gunboats and jets, or like small boats that they could use for, you know, quick raids into, you know, Israel's coast, jet skis for the same, scuba equipment. I mean, the big thing that people find interesting because it's, you know, high tech and futuristic is, are these sort of autonomous drones, which are basically just like slow moving missiles, just, you know, packed with, you know, 30 kilos of explosives that can be directed by GPS toward an Israeli naval ship or an Israeli gas rig, as the case may be. One of these attacks was attempted yesterday, according to the IDF. A number of Hamas operatives were seen going to the shore in northern Gaza and putting what is suspected to be an autonomous submarine into the water. Pretty rapidly, the IDF bombed both the drone itself, you know, blowing it up sort of before it left the coast, as well as the car in which the operatives were driving away from the scene. So we've seen that. There are some other things that Hamas has attempted with flying unmanned aerial vehicles that have not yet succeeded significantly during the fighting, either because they were brought down by the Iron Dome in some of the first known uses of the system for bringing down drones, or in one case by an F-16 over the sea. So those efforts are sort of being carried out, but they haven't so far been successful, which is an area of concern for Hamas and an area of significant pleasure for the IDF.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Jacob, you're joining us from New York. Thank you for your patience. Let's talk about how the U.S. has reacted to what is going on in Israel and in Gaza, and specifically Biden.
Sure. So President Biden spoke with Netanyahu for the third time since the conflict started. So it's quite a few times after we had that blip in the beginning where there was this, when's Biden going to call Bibi? So it's happened three times this week. And in this call for the first time, Biden expressed his support for a ceasefire. Not exactly the demand that some of these other leaders across the world or more progressive Democrats are calling for. But he's getting there. And I think we've seen that because of there's this growing concern over civilian casualties, growing concern over certain targets by Israel, specifically this media tower that the IDF says was being used by Hamas operatives. In addition to other strikes where we've had overall dozens of children being killed in Gaza. And at the same time, Biden is still reiterating his belief that Israel has a right to defend itself and that there's no equivalency to be made between Israel doing so and Hamas firing rockets indiscriminately at civilians. So that he's holding that line and doing so by also blocking Security Council joint statements three times in the past week that would have criticized both sides for the violence, but not made a mention of Hamas. This was at least the last iteration of the draft joint statement that he blocked, or the administration blocked. But according to diplomats I spoke to, this was not really the reason. The real reason that they blocked these statements is that they have their own efforts to try to bring about a ceasefire. The U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary for Israeli-Palestinian Affairs, Hadi Amar, is in the region right now meeting with, he's already met with both Israeli and Palestinian leaders, Abbas on the Palestinian side, and Ashkenazi and Gantz on the Israeli side, and they're working to try to bring about a ceasefire. At the same time, there's still the message that I'm being told that's being sent is that we'd like one, we're not pushing it, there's no deadline at this point, but we're really trying to get there. And this approach has really angered quite a bit of people that, including allies of Biden, of course, people that are lesser fans of his, the Republicans like Ted Cruz, who's announced a few days ago that he's heading to Israel to see what Israel needs for help because the White House is not doing enough. A couple of days ago, he announced that demanded Biden give Israel more Iron Dome missiles, even though Judah can talk about that there was no need for Iron Dome missiles. So Republicans are mad and looking for any way to criticize him. And progressives in the party are, I would say, even more upset with the approach that Biden's taking, demanding that he call for an immediate ceasefire. And of course, the international community, as a result of the Biden led U.S. mission to the U.N. blocking all these security council statements, are also quite annoyed. But I think for now, Biden is really okay with that stance, at least with talks with people who are familiar, because he genuinely believes that Israel, first of all, he's in the past called himself a Zionist. He says if Israel wasn't established, he would help make one. And he genuinely believes that Israel's a right to defend itself against Hamas. Now that is slowly changing, that patience as civilian casualties grow, but he's not where the rest of the party is. And I don't think he's that close to being so either.
Now, Judah, so far, the IDF has picked off some of the more easy targets. What do you think is going to happen when things get a little more complicated in terms of Israel's international standing?
I mean, I think the two are very related. When Israel sort of launched this, it's very easy to go for targets that are easier to clear out, that are not as close to, you know, heavily populated civilian areas, or where it isn't a civilian area, but you can easily get the civilians out of there before you conduct the strike. And as Israel, you know, as the days turn into weeks in the fighting, those sort of easy targets, which I'm putting in air quotes, they're not actually easy, but, you know, comparatively speaking, easy targets sort of dry up. And all of a sudden you have the rocket, you know, launch pads that are outside of a school or in a school or, you know, whatever. And that's where you're seeing, especially in the last, you know, in recent days, you're seeing Israeli strikes that are, I'm not going to say on each particular one what the target was. I don't have that level of detailed information at this time. But that's where you're seeing, you know, we've seen in the past couple of days, larger numbers of Palestinian civilian casualties, as well as the strike on the building that housed the AP that Jacob mentioned. I don't think it's by accident that that wasn't struck on day one of the conflict and only came sort of later on. So as Israel conducts these strikes on more difficult places that are surrounded by, you know, more civilians, that's not to say that they're, you know, illegitimate military targets. I mean, they certain, you know, assuming they fit the bill of, you know, they're being used for military purposes, you know, it's perfectly legitimate for the IDF to strike them in these cases. But at the same time, you are going to see the numbers of, you know, civilian casualties rise, and you're going to start seeing more and more pushback. And I think that sort of tied into that, as Israel has moved into these targets, you've seen, you know, in parallel, the comments from the Biden administration and other sort of, and not just Biden, but other, you know, friendly voices in the U.S. and elsewhere around the world go from very clear support, considering Hamas sort of launched the initial attack on Jerusalem, to, you know, expressing more concern and more reservations. And you're going to start seeing more and more calls for a ceasefire sort of as this presses on and as the Palestinian death toll rises.
Judah, do you see any realistic potential for a ceasefire in the coming days?
There's certainly potential for a ceasefire. I mean, the IDF has really been on a blitz, you know, trying to show the you know, its military successes over the past, you know, week plus of fighting. You know, this many, you know, kilometers of underground tunnels and this many bunkers and this many rocket production facilities and this many top terrorist leaders and so on. So the IDF is definitely presenting a picture that it can sort of sell to the Israeli public of a victory for Israel, at least a tactical victory. I don't think Israel has a strategic victory here, because Israel doesn't have the greatest strategy towards Gaza. So achieving anything on that front is not really in the cards. But Israel can sort of definitely sell, okay, we've pushed off the next war or the next, you know, operation for, and at least another year, at least another 2-3 years, whatever the final assessments will be. At the same time, there's still plenty more, you know, Hamas and Islamic Jihad apparatus in Gaza for the IDF to strike. I believe the IDF thinks it's in its best interest to leave the other side to keep fighting after it could, you know, realistically broker a ceasefire, to show the other side that it's, you know, not messing around for the next go around, and to try to restore what they call deterrence.
I can tell you from the international community, there's several tracks going on right now. There's obviously the one I mentioned earlier in the U.S. Egypt is playing a major role trying to mediate a ceasefire. Qatar and Russia are also working on their own paths. There's not a lot of coordinating. I can tell you that Egyptian officials are talking with the U.S., but also trying their own routes because they have closer ties with Hamas, and those talks are continuing. I spoke with a diplomat familiar with those Egyptian mediations yesterday, and he basically said, we're very close and maximum 2 days away. And that comes based on this familiarity. Hamas or Egypt has really been negotiating these ceasefires for quite a long time. Obviously, there hasn't been a war since 2014, but there's been these blips in hostilities quite a bit, as Judah can talk about. And they've been involved in bringing those to an end most of the time. And based on that familiarity with how those rounds of violence ebb and flow, that's their feeling that we're getting to that point. It's kind of interesting that the diplomat I spoke to said maximum 2 days. Aviv Kochavi yesterday said there will be at least 2 days of fighting. I think that all these sides that when asked about comments about ceasefires or how much longer it's going to take, they're obviously projecting. There's a message they want to send, and Egypt would like to see a ceasefire. So they're going to talk. Maybe their officials might want to talk more about a ceasefire being more likely, and hopefully that will kind of push the sides toward that end. So there's definitely a lot of speculation. But I think, again, as international pressure is growing, that's obviously going to play a role. Biden, who maybe plays the biggest role in out of all the international community, because he has the most trust in Israel, and kind of Israel seeming to be the more decisive player and when this ends, because Hamas at least is sending messages, according to Egypt, that it's interested in a ceasefire. IDF can say otherwise. But Biden, right now, because he's only talking about expressing support if Israel's interested in a ceasefire, it seems like there's a little bit more time. But it does, because we're inching toward where he's about to say, it seems like, calling for demanding a ceasefire right away, that's where kind of we are.
Okay, thank you very much, and we'll check back. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raoul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.